The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you feel the Bible's morality is old-fashioned. After all, times are changing. Well, my friend, times do change, and cultures change, but right and wrong does not change. If something was evil 2,000 years ago, it is still evil today. And yet, one would not get that idea from many of today's humanities classes, where they teach that right and wrong are relative. But it doesn't stop at our schools. Nothing is sacred anymore, not even our fairy tales such as The Wizard of Oz, which was written as the first purely American fairy tale, retold in the popular Broadway musical Wicked, which was a brilliant musical, entertaining, hilarious, clever, and yet I totally disagreed with its message. It turned things on its head, asked the question, supposing the Wicked Witch of the West was not the wicked one, supposing Glinda was the wicked one, or to get more contemporary, Sleeping Beauty, retold in a much more recent movie that just opened called Maleficent. Here to discuss this phenomenon with me is our recurring co-host and film critic, Mark Boobian. Mark, welcome back to our program.
Thanks for having me on, Bob. And, you know, when you proposed the idea for this show a week ago or so, I was really actually inspired by it because I liked the idea of talking about kind of the dark side of movies, the evil side, and the notion of re-envisioning some villains like Maleficent, the movie's doing. And especially since this is not the best summer we've ever had for movies. Most movies are actually not doing super well at the box office, so there's not a heck of a lot to really talk about.
Don't they usually do well in the summertime?
Yeah, actually, the summertime's the biggest time of year for films.
Well, we're not really much into summer yet.
No, but there's not a heck of a lot coming up, unfortunately. And some of the better movies are actually pushed out past the 4th of July. I don't know why. I think the movie industry is not anticipating them to be good, but I think some of the better movies we'll see in late July, early August.
Didn't George Lucas usually release his in the spring so that kids could talk about it in school before the summer break?
I don't know if that was his inspiration or not, but there's the Memorial Day weekend that's the big, that's one of the big weekends, and that's the beginning of summer, so to speak, but people are still in school at that time. When Lucas did, I think it was episode one or episode two, he released it 2 weeks before Memorial Day, but because he wanted the fans to see it, and then it would kind of free up the theaters for the non-fans who want to go on Memorial Day to see it, and it won't be all packed by a bunch of crazy Star Wars nut jobs, so to speak.
Like us. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the way it goes. Summer is a big time of year, but unfortunately, every so often we have a kind of a slow year, and this is just one of them. You'll hear a lot of talk probably at the end of the year that this was just not a very good summer. And it's really just because they don't have a lot of good product out. So anyway, that opens us up to talk about other things, and that's nice because this idea of talking about villains and moral relativism, morality, and everything, I think that really opens us up wide for a lot of different things. Not just movies, but TV shows, plays. You've already mentioned Wicked, which was originally a book.
Yeah,
turned into a play.
I didn't read the books, but I believe they were pretty serious. But the play was
a little more comical.
Again, I love that. I'm always so frustrated when, as an artist, I love something, but then I disagree with its message. Because the better job they do, the more potent the message becomes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and we've talked about that too in the past. I think that's a really interesting phenomenon. And it does, I mean, I've seen a lot of movies that I really love that have bad messages. But you know what? The thing I really, that to me, that doesn't eliminate the movie as a good movie or make me not want to see it. The only thing I really hate is when they bang you on the head with the message and just keep telling you over and over, or just it's so obvious.
Well, Wicked kind of banged you on the head.
Oh, okay. That's a bummer. Well, then fortunately, I didn't see it. The good thing, like a movie like Being John Malkovich is one of those that I didn't agree with the message, but it didn't really bang you on the head.
And it was such an original
movie. Yeah, and it's so wacky and funny and weird. It just, I love the movie, even though I absolutely don't agree with what it was saying. But, you know, there's movies like Traffic where I agree with the message, but darn it, stop hitting me with it, okay? Come on. But, you know, that's just the way it goes, again, in film. So one of the things that I was really thinking about in terms of the way we're viewing and maybe re-envisioning villains a little bit is that, you know, on 9/11, we really saw a change in what the definition of evil really is, I think, in a real way. Because in our lifetimes, I mean, I was born in the 60s, and there really wasn't any huge worldwide event that was beyond a comprehension, in a way, in terms of evil. I mean, Pearl Harbor was a previous generation. That was a big, huge historical event, and even that, we could point to it being an act of war, there being reasons for it and everything, and it's calculated and all that. The Holocaust, again, now that is truly something that was evil, obviously. We can't deny that at all.
Although many people do deny that.
Yes, that is right.
And the fact that it's so incomprehensible is one of the reasons they do.
Right. And see, now that's a very good point. Exactly that. And you know, I was raised with the Holocaust as a reality, so I don't even consider denying it. I don't question it, and obviously I'm going to question
it. Well, and it's very well documented.
Yeah.
But the fact that something that evil could have happened in our enlightened 20th century, that's what causes the revision.
Right. But now the important thing, though, is that for my generation, I'm one and a half basically removed from the Holocaust, one full generation, maybe one and a half. So our children now, though, are growing up completely out of that generation. Maybe their grandparents saw it, but that's not something grandparents really talk about. And even the grandparents, it may be their parents that were affected by it more directly. So that's something that's fading into the past. So 9/11 is this huge event that we saw with our own eyes, and even our children. I was talking to a parent actually last night, and she brought up her son, who doesn't like to see violent movies. And he doesn't like it because, she didn't say why he doesn't like it, but he doesn't like to see the bad side of people. He doesn't want to be challenged by that, the evil of people, even in movies where the evil is somewhat comical.
Even in a fantasy, like Lord of the Rings or a superhero movie?
Or, like Transformers, we talked about a little bit, and, you know, a few other movies. Right, so those superhero movies, he doesn't want to engage in the idea that there are evil people, because it's hard. And in a post-9/11 generation, we've been faced with real evil. And he's of the age where he was probably 3 or 4 when it happened, and he would have witnessed it probably with his own eyes on television. And it was terrible. I mean, it affected me for years, and I don't think I'll ever get over it, to be honest. So I think that has a big effect on the way we approach what is evil and how are we portraying evil. And even with Maleficent and some other movies, maybe possibly re-envisioning what is evil. And I think those are good questions to really ask ourselves. Not necessarily to say there is no evil, but maybe to come to grips with what is evil and what drives a person to become evil per se, or what is there even a chance of redemption for somebody that's beyond redemption that we might, you know, that we would say is beyond redemption. And then there's the whole question of moral relativism that you brought up as well, where it's sort of the denial of evil entirely, and it's just, you can kind of just say, well, that's how they do it. And it's a really easy out, in a sense. You know, you don't have to admit that there's evil. And so that's a big relief for the human conscience, I think. And that's probably why we're seeing moral relativism on the rise. After facing such a horrible evil, it's easier to just deny that it was evil, or that there is such an evil.
Well, and our country learned the lessons of 9/11 for a very brief time, because for a while it was, wow, this was horrific.
Right.
This was evil. But it hasn't been that many years, and already look at the historical revision. We're hearing things such as, well, maybe if we hadn't gone over and invaded Iraq. Okay, well, we can talk about whether we should have invaded Iraq, but the point is 9/11 had nothing to do with Iraq. They invaded us. And so there are already excuses being given, like, well, okay, there's terrorism, but then we go and we make it worse. Well, there are ideologies behind terrorism that have that really have nothing to do with us. And that, whether or not we should be over there trying to bring democracy to a nation that doesn't believe in democracy is a whole separate question.
Right.
I'm not sure we should be doing that. But that's very separate from the question of whether they were just evil to come over and attack
us. Right, exactly. We have to be able to divorce ourselves from the political motivations and say, you have done something that actually goes beyond justification. And that's certainly what I saw on 9/11. And, you know, I heard about people jumping up out of their couches when the buildings collapsed and cheering. You know, I read about this in the New York Times, I believe. It's hearsay now. I saw
some celebrations out in the street from some of the local Muslim mosques.
Right. And so, again, we're looking at something that is hard to comprehend, because what kind of person would celebrate that horrific of an event? And we do have to ask that kind of question, because now we've seen it. And what do we do with it? And again, we have to be able to draw a line and say there are things that go beyond justifiability.
And this is the teaching of the Bible. The Bible teaches that there is such a thing.
Right.
As evil, and that all human beings have an evil side of their nature called the sin nature.
Right. And be careful not to let it out. Now, I think a good movie. Yeah, now, I didn't see Wicked, but you did mention The Wizard of Oz, and I jumped to Oz the Great and Powerful.
Which was somewhat derivative of Wicked. It was a little bit different, because in Oz the Great and Powerful, it's kind of understandable and sympathetic why the Wicked Witch becomes wicked, but she's still taking responsibility for making that choice. It was kind of like an Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader thing.
Yeah.
However, in Wicked, it was just, well, she was never really the wicked one at all. She was just misunderstood. So they're derivative of each other, but they're different.
Right.
And I loved Oz the Great and Powerful.
Yeah.
I said that on the show.
Right. And you challenged me to watch it. And when I finally did, it was absolutely a wonderful movie.
It was so well done.
Yeah.
It was such a brilliant movie.
It's hard to believe it was Sam Raimi. You know, that's, I just will never get over the whole Evil Dead thing with Sam Raimi. But, you know,
but
that's
Sam Raimi.
I love him because he's so wacky. But, and he actually, you could see his touch in it. It was a very, I think the movie was good because of him. But what was interesting to me about the movie is it asked some really moving and deep questions about what is evil and our responsibility and how our soul can become corrupted if we're not careful.
Yeah, and I should say there's a difference between a movie that's going to give us the story about how somebody became evil and somebody going and retelling a story that somebody else wrote, like an author like Frank Baum of The Wizard of Oz, who's not alive anymore. Anyway, here with film critic Mark Boobian, we'll be right back.
This is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my film critic and co-host and good friend, Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. So in terms of Oz, what I was saying before, again, is just what I found great about the movie is that it challenged us to look at what happened to the Wicked Witch to make her become wicked. Not to necessarily, as you pointed out, not to justify her wickedness or to be apologetic about it, but to let us see what happened and see how she got to be who she is and how the interactions of other people influenced her. And when I mentioned, you know, the sin nature and being on guard against letting it out, I think this was a really good movie where it showed how easy it is to be convinced to turn to a more evil side. You just take something, a hurt, a pain, and it's not hard for somebody to work it up into something that becomes overwhelming emotionally and can even drive you to such hatred that you would make terrible decisions.
Right. And now two films or film series, I should say, where I thought that worked brilliantly. One obvious one is Star Wars, because We were introduced to Darth Vader as a villain. And when they do the prequels, and I know a lot of people didn't like the prequels. I'm one of the people that did like them. When we see this innocent kid and then later on this teenager, and he's a good person, and yet, I mean, he's flawed. He's a human being, but he's a good person,
Right. Basically.
We know he's going to become Darth Vader, but we don't know how it's going to happen. That's the best drama money can buy.
Right.
But George Lucas envisioned that from the beginning. The other one was Smallville, where we know that Lex Luthor and Superman are going to become arch enemies someday, but as teenagers, they're the best of friends. And even in the comic books, that was part of the background of Lex Luthor. It was done differently, of course. But in the comic books, Lex Luthor and Superboy had been friends when they were teenagers, and there was an accident that caused it. So that is, not only do I like that, but it's fantastic drama and character development. But again, that's when the series was designed that way. If Frank Baum says there was this evil witch, I don't think it's incumbent on somebody else years later when the author's not alive anymore to come and say, well, maybe she wasn't evil. And that's the issue that I take with it.
Right. And that's a good one because, you're changing the author's original vision. And when we take stories that are in our cultural domain, I think, is you have to be really careful not to necessarily change them and rework them to mean something else, because I think that can be more damaging to the story, the story's originality than anything. And often movies aren't very good. Oz is an unusual example of a movie that goes back, re-envisions a little bit, but they didn't destroy or damage.
No, not at all.
What Oz was, as we know it as a child, as our childhood fantasy. And so to their credit, but that was a very tough line to walk and a very hard thing to do. Now in terms of Star Wars, I think that Star Wars raises a few questions of its own that were troubling for me. When I saw Star Wars, obviously I grew up with Star Wars, loved it, and then wanted to see episode 1, 2, and 3 done. Exciting. Some of the greatest moments I've ever had in movie theaters were just those movies, the excitement, the adrenaline, how awesome those movies are. And I loved all of the movies. Some more than others, obviously, and some characters a lot less than others, but they were still good movies. However, going back and looking at what happened to Anakin, when I rewatched Star Wars Episode 4, which is the very first Star Wars from 1970s, I felt a real sense of tragedy that I couldn't get over. So a lot of the joy that I had in Star Wars as this grand adventure and this fight against evil, it was sort of I don't know, almost like the rug was pulled out from under me.
Well, now there's a depth to it. It's not just this fun swashbuckling
right.
popcorn drama.
And I feel terrible. And so the vision of Anakin strangling his wife, the woman he loves so desperately, and he's turning to the dark side for her, and he ends up killing her. It's just so horrible, and I could not
It was his fear of losing her that drove him to the dark side, and yet he ended up being the instrument of her demise.
Right. It's an amazing story. That is such a powerful thing, and it's a great story, but it did put a shadow on the originals, the first... I'm a Star Wars fan, and I still can't get the dumb numbering right, but... Episode four through six.
Anybody who watches them for the first time should always start with episode four. Because
right,
the suspense is trying to know how Darth Vader got that way.
Right, exactly.
Once you've seen it that way, it can be fun to go back and watch it from episode one on.
Yeah, yeah. One of the interesting things, too, now when I was thinking about this stuff, I was focused, in terms of Darth Vader's turn to the dark side and the things that he did that were bad. Now, if we were going to actually evaluate him sort of, maybe mathematically or whatever, what he did was he killed children, hundreds of children, potentially hundreds of Jedi, their guards, the people in the temple. This is all occurring sort of off camera, implied, not shown directly. But what we do see is the relationship that he builds with his wife, Padme, throughout the movies. And we know her character and we know his character. And so for me, death of his wife was far more effectual than any of the Jedi that he kills. They could have said he killed 10,000 children, and I still feel much more emotional connection to the killing of his wife. And I think that that's an interesting phenomenon where even in today's society where we see things happen maybe overseas, and then we read about numbers of people killed or tragedies. We don't know those people. We don't know anything about them. So they're kind of empty numbers. And a film like Star Wars, that wasn't its point to emphasize that. But I think that kind of awakens us to the idea that people that are doing terrible things, there's more to them than just meets the eye. Now, the danger here at this point is I could start talking about how this person has made choices and maybe they're not evil because they've made the choices. And I got to watch the choices and I have sympathy for them. And I don't want them to be considered evil.
Or maybe they weren't evil, but they became evil.
Right. And so this is Anakin. He wasn't evil per se, but
he became evil.
He became evil. Now, I'm sympathetic to him, so I want to justify what he did. So I can, the kids and stuff, I didn't see that.
You mean justify or do you mean just understand?
Well, in terms of moral relativism, I might want
to
go down the road.
A moral relativist would say it wasn't evil.
Right, because they would want to justify it, because they know who he is and they don't want him to be evil.
And we should separate that, too. There's a difference between saying I understand why he became evil or I don't believe there is evil. Those are two very different things. Okay, we're talking about good and evil in motion pictures. We'll be right back.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Hi, I'm Dana Wright, here to talk about Bob Siegel's book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... The title itself is an open-ended question. You fill in the rest. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? How will God judge people who never heard of Jesus? Can a scientific mind really accept miracles? These are but some of the concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book has been enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians alike. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture, a pop culture edition today. Always good to be joined by my good friend, film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks again, Bob. Now, in talking about Star Wars and Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker. Now, interestingly, we've got two names for him, the good guy name and the bad guy name. So we can separate him in our minds, too. So there's a lot of different things we can say about this character, this particular person, because there are so many different ways to look at him. The moral relativist way, which is what I was kind of discussing a minute ago before the commercial. But there's other ways, the non-relativist way, the moral absolutist way, where, yes, he did something beyond a point of terror, but that you just don't do. You've gone beyond
a line. Particularly, and I know you said you were more affected by the death of the wife.
Right.
And I was too. I think the killing of the kids was what went beyond the pale.
Right. If we were to actually take a step back and look at it.
It took away from the fun. There's a fun to Star Wars movies, too.
Right.
I like the depth, but there's a place where you don't take them that seriously. And boy, that even seeing Princess Leia's whole planet
destroyed
didn't have quite the effect of seeing some innocent children saying, Anakin, help us. And then he takes out his lightsaber and you know he's about to kill them.
Right. And that was an absolutely horrifying scene. Now, some of the things about that scene, too, are that one of the kids, I believe it's a child we saw in the previous movie who speaks to Obi-Wan in a scene, because there's a scene with the children to sort of...
Right.
That I think Lucas put in to set up this moment with Anakin so that we knew that there were children in the temple. I think that makes the scene a little bit more powerful because we know that this is a child that we've met and it's a person. They're not just a concept, but a reality, a real person. And that's the thing that I kind of concluded about Padme, Anakin's wife, that I didn't just see her as a number or a thing, but as a real human being. And not just her as a real human being, but him. And so what happens between them is... The tragedy of that is elevated greatly because I have come to know them and care about them as people, per se, as real human beings, flesh and blood people. And so it makes facing the evil that he does much harder and the level of tragedy much greater. So there's two kind of things I'm saying here that, you know, knowing the character, it does make facing evil harder. And also knowing the recipient of the evil, I think that makes us focus more on a specific individual or a different thing and gives us a sense of an evil done better when we know the person.
Right. And whereas I said that dramatically, again, I think that's the best drama money can buy to find out how a good person became evil. When we dovetail this into reality, I did have some problems because as a Christian, I believe in redemption. And of course, I love Return of the Jedi, and I love seeing Darth Vader redeemed and forgiven. But I do believe that even though God is willing to forgive sin, there are some things that are so heinous that it's not that God couldn't forgive it, but I think we human beings reach a point, and the Bible does tell us, that people can reach a point of no return, where their heart is so hard and they have become so evil that they're just never going to return to God. Now, we don't always know where that point is, but I think that by the time somebody's doing despicable things like murdering children, that I think in reality he would have been beyond
past
the point
that
of redemption, even though obviously in the movie I'm still glad
he was
seen and redeemed because it was a movie. But in reality, if somebody had done that with kids, I think that would have been evidence that he had reached a point of no return at that point.
Right. And that's a really, I think that that's a good observation, a good question. We touched on this actually a little bit when we talked about the Star Trek movie Into Darkness.
We did.
A year ago.
We did talk about whether there's a point you can reach where you just, and again, technically God forgives everything, but this says something about the condition of the heart.
Right.
And whether it's so seared that it's just never going to go back to God.
Right. We don't want to be forgiven. We've turned away from God so greatly that it's not that God is not going to forgive us. It's that we've rejected even the notion of forgiveness. We're just, forget it, God. I don't want forgiveness.
Yes. And the Bible draws a distinction between being sinful and being evil, which I think we talked about then too.
Right. And that's a very important one. Yeah.
There is an evil side of our nature, but it's only one side. And by battling that side back and forth, sometimes doing good things, sometimes doing bad things, that makes us all sinners. But one is evil when they've completely given in to the evil side. That's a very big difference, and a difference that the church doesn't always stress enough, I should say.
Right. Well, it's a very difficult one, I think, to engage in and to talk about, because it is, I mean, the notion of evil is a very difficult concept to come to grips with.
Well, and one of the definitions of evil, although it wouldn't be the only one, is one who will no longer take responsibility for their own actions.
Ah, that's actually
Christians,
interesting. Yeah.
You and I are Christians. You and I will both call ourselves sinners. We take responsibility for our sin.
Right.
And that's the difference. If we were no longer taking responsibility for our sin, rationalizing it and justifying it, we would be on the road to becoming evil.
But what about Adam and Eve? Their first act is to point the finger at the next guy standing next to them, or girl, I should say. Adam's, hey, it wasn't me, it was the woman, and then the woman, it wasn't me, it was the snake.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, you're making a good point, and we should qualify that, because obviously at times we all rationalize what we
Absolutely.
Do, too. Nobody gets out of bed and says, I think I'll go sin this
right.
morning. We rationalize it, but in the course of time where we realize what we've done, we feel bad. Adam and Eve did repent.
Right.
They did make animal sacrifices, which were the way of repenting in those days. It looked toward the ultimate sacrifice of Christ. But yes, there are times of rationalization. But I mean ultimately.
Right.
Where a person is no longer taking responsibility for anything they do. That's what makes you evil.
Yeah. The reason I brought that up is because in my own experience, I have a tendency to, no, I didn't do that. I don't want to, because I don't want to be pointed to as being the bad person or a bad person or viewed as somebody evil. So that's not a sin. That's not wrong. You know, so rationalization has many reasons. And that's one of the good things about Christianity is if we're walking in the truth and we have friends around us that know the truth, that, okay, come on, you're rationalizing. It was wrong. Let's talk about it. And we work through it. We forgive each other. That's like in my marital relationship with my wife, I'll do that all the time. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. And then eventually, yeah, I did it. And then
sure. And it could be because you love the ideals of Christianity so much that you don't want to admit that you might have done that too. But eventually those same ideals have got to drive you to
the
be
truth.
Honest about it.
Yes.
Okay. Good and evil in movies and in the real world. We'll be right back.
Your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. educateforlife.org.
Evil, one of the hallmarks and themes of our fairy tales and fantasies, but now it's being turned on its head by people asking the question in these same movies, what is good, what is evil? I did see the movie Maleficent. It's a retelling of Sleeping Beauty. I don't believe that would have happened without Wicked starting the trend. And I don't think Wicked would have happened if not for the moral relativist culture. I will say, though, that Maleficent was a beautiful movie, very well done, very well acted. Again, artistically, I would give it very high marks. But there's understandable reasons why the evil fairy godmother is not quite the evil person that you think. And indeed, Sleeping Beauty's dad, he's really the evil one. And it's just starting a trend that's concerning me. On the other hand, we're talking about films like Star Wars, which from the beginning were designed for the purpose of telling us how somebody became evil. That's a whole different story because that's a whole different agenda that the original author had.
Right, and that's a good point. And I have some other examples of Disney films.
And by the way, this is Disney that made both versions, Maleficent,
yes,
and the original Sleeping Beauty.
That's
they
correct.
Were both done by Disney.
And they're connected.
And she looks like the person from Sleeping Beauty, even though this is a live action. They made her look just like
right.
that person.
Right, so they are definitely connecting it to the original cartoon, the original animated film.
Which was one of his better animated features.
His best.
I thought. It was some of the best animation I've ever seen.
Yeah. Ivan Durrell was the background artist, a very, very beautiful artist and just some amazing work.
Nick's giving us a thumbs up in there.
Yes,
he concurs.
Sleeping Beauty is my favorite animated film of all time. So, and not just because of the story, but because of the artistry of the movie. Now, Disney, this isn't the first time Disney's gone and re-envisioned a movie. Now, Disney's obviously not just motivated by wanting to tell a good story. They're motivated by money.
Well, the real Disney hasn't been around for a long time.
Right.
And that's where part of that motivation comes from.
The quote-unquote Disney, I guess I'll have to say.
But, the enterprise called Disney.
Yeah. Or we'll put the TM at the end so everybody knows who we're talking about. Okay, now, it's almost embarrassing to bring this up, but it is actually a little bit relevant. Disney did it's torturous to even say it. They did a Cinderella 2 on direct-to-video.
Haven't they done Lady and the Tramp 2?
Yes.
They've
toed almost everything.
All
yeah.
of them. I hate it when they put a number after
yeah,
number.
Now, but this one really just, the story was over. That's it. Cinderella, happily ever after. Don't go anywhere else.
Well, you know what, Mark? Star Wars is over, too, according to George Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to make more. I wouldn't mind another one from the Star Wars universe, but they're going to call the next one 7.
Yeah.
We're going to see Han Solo and his troubled teen complaining that dad won't go to his ball games like we've seen in a million disaster movies.
Yeah, well, Han Solo can, you know, shoot him with the laser.
And he and Princess Leia will be having a divorce. And, I mean, you know they're going to do that stuff. You just know they're going to do that.
I tend to want to look positively towards the future
Star Wars. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they don't put any of that in there. It would ruin such a good franchise.
And I thought Cinderella 2 was the worst possible thing I could envision tonight.
Reminded me that things could get even worse soon.
Yeah, as if things weren't bad enough already that they do a movie like this. But now the reason I bring that up is because in order to get a part 2 with the same characters, you kind of have to do a little bit of fancy footwork
with them.
Oh, so
did they make her sisters more friendly in the second
Absolutely.
Cinderella?
Absolutely.
They weren't the evil stepsisters anymore.
Right. One of them isn't. And so Cinderella spends quite a bit of time trying to get her one sister to become, to meet a guy so that she can have somebody to be boyfriend and girlfriend with. And that's sort of her motivation. And they tone down the evil stepmother, who is beyond actually, and the actress as actually Maleficent in the Sleeping Beauty plays the evil stepmother in Cinderella in the '50s in the animated versions. It's the same actress for both. She's amazing at being bad, and there's no question that the stepmother is truly beyond the point of
well, and that
evil.
Was an era when our culture accepted that there was good and evil.
Right. And so that could be why, that could be some of what they did and why they wanted to, oh, let's mess around with this a little bit. But I think for Cinderella 2, a lot of the motivation really was monetary. Also, Cinderella 2 followed on another movie that was done, which was a retelling of the Cinderella story, which was, and it made quite a bit of money. It was the movie Ever After with Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore, yes.
Right, and I actually just saw this recently. I didn't see it when it came out.
It kind of took all the supernatural fantasy out of the movie, didn't it? That,
yeah.
They did.
And it, well, they still had some of it in there. They kind of walked a line, and I thought it was really well done, and I was surprised. But in this movie, one of the stepsisters is not evil. She's sympathetic, and you can see her being pounded down. And so, and she actually kind of starts to like this guy in the movie. So I can see Cinderella 2 kind of rolling with that idea, and it's almost like they took that movie as the basis rather than the original cartoon.
Well, and you know the movie that did this on steroids was The Grinch.
Yeah, that's another one that I thought Cinderella 2 was bad enough. Yeah,
Dr. Seuss classic, The Grinch was bad because his heart was two sizes too small.
Right.
And he does have a change of heart at the end of the story, and that's great. In the movie put out by Ron Howard, he had a dysfunctional childhood. He was picked on in school. The girl he liked didn't like him. It was so bad.
Right.
Dr. Seuss has to be turning in his grave.
Oh, I think I will be turning in my grave for him after I'm, well, whatever. Never mind. We won't go there. But that, again, brings us back to, I think, this question of when we re-envision, or even when we originally envision evil, what are we dealing with? Now, the Star Trek movie, was Star Trek II recast entirely.
The new Star Trek movie.
The new Star Trek
movie. The new version of The Wrath of Khan.
Now, Wrath of Khan was an amazing movie. And to me, Khan, Noonien and Soong in the movie, played by Ricardo Montalban, is, to me, is absolutely the best villain in any movie I've ever seen, bar none. I mean, he just, better than Darth Vader, better than anybody. And he's not cartoonish in any way. He was, pardon the phrase, hell-bent on revenge, and that was it.
He did that coming off of Fantasy Island, so you really got to hand it to the actor.
It's amazing. And he, you have no question that he does not care about anything else but vengeance. And he's, and so the idea that, you know, he wouldn't even care if you called him evil at this point because he just wanted revenge. And the a similar type of thing where Darth Vader kills his wife. Here's this guy whose wife was killed by Kirk, and he wants to go after Kirk for the death of his wife. And this is a very black and white type of evil. This is a guy that has crossed the line. And if you, you can even, I mean, there's just no question. If you asked him if there was this possible fantasy world where you could go ask Khan what he was thinking, he'd say, revenge, come on, didn't you watch the movie?
Well, also, Khan was motivated by having been a superhuman from the genetic experience.
And even in the previous, in the earlier episode, he was,
it was a love for power, a narcissistic motivation.
Exactly, and that's from the previous episode. They played that up, and then he goes, you know, all the way down the line for revenge. Where the newer Khan is sort of walking a line between good and bad at different times, depending on what point in the movie you're watching him.
Okay, we will be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. bobsiegel.net.
Back to the Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Booby.
Thanks again, Bob. So the difference between the two Wrath of Khan, so to speak, movies, in the original, we have this character who there's no question as to his motivation and to his the state of his heart, where the newer movie, depending on when you look at him, you don't know exactly where he is. And now, when we talked last, Bob, I believe you were saying that, well, look at what he's done. There's things that, you know, he would have crossed this line that we were talking about earlier where, okay, he's not going to care about redemption at this point, or he's so far from God, that's it. And that's a good point. But one of the things that I like about the newer movie, too, is that it still raises the question, is there a point where he can be redeemed? Now, the nice thing about it is it's a question. There's no answer. So you come to your conclusion. I can come to a different one, and we can talk about it. And in that discussion, I think there's a lot of fruit there that we go through. Okay, what is it to be evil? Where is that point of no return? How evil is evil? Now, I mentioned earlier but the arguments that I could have with my significant other, my wife, and how I respond to them, and my nature, my own nature as I know it, is to deny or to justify the things that I do that are bad. But eventually, I hopefully will always recognize the truth that I did do something bad, and I will seek to turn from it and to be redeemed from it, to be forgiven. I'll feel bad. I'll feel sorry. I want to, you know, move on. And you know, we don't see that with this particular character, but where are we going to draw the line and say that they can't have that kind of redemptive second thought or change of heart where I say, okay, I have been justifying what I'm doing. That's wrong. I have to go a different way. I have to acknowledge the truth. A good show that I've just started watching, but I do know where it goes, is the TV show Once Upon a Time. I think it's in season 3 now. It started season 3, but season 1 is really the relevant season to our topic, where one of the main characters is the evil witch of, is it Sleeping Beauty? It's not Sleeping Beauty. It's not Cinderella. It's Snow White.
Snow White. Yes, yeah, White's very similar to Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, I can't believe I confused those two. But so she, you get to see their lives. There's a lot of characters. It's a bunch of fairy tale people. But it's a TV show, so they have time to really flesh out who they are and what they're about and their motivations and their backstories and what's going on. And they have an interesting setting in modern time as well. And it's a very well done show. And one of the really powerful things about it is we get to see the evil queen really, really turn evil. And she is faced with this choice. She's just like Khan. Revenge has become her sole reason for living, her sole motivation. And she is given completely into it. And she's wants to cast a spell that's going to send everybody into the future, and it's terrible and evil, and they'll be in this horrible place. The future being our time, of course, and how bad our time is, that's why it's such a terrible curse. But ultimately, she has to choose to kill the most important thing to her in order to enact the spell, because the spell is so terrible it requires complete and total commitment of evilness, so to speak. And so she murders her father, and we got to see the relationship she had with her father. He was the only sympathetic character to her, the only character that cared about her as a father only could or a mother only could for a child. And you even, to the credit of the actress and to the credit of the writers, we get to see the struggle she goes through in the decision to murder this person that is so important. And there's even a conversation between the two. She tells him what she's going to do, and he gets a chance to respond, and he explains to her what choice she can make. He offers her all of the beauty and wonder of forgiveness, of being able to say, let's go a different way. Let's turn around. Let's forget revenge. Let's forgive the person. We can start over. We can find love again. We can make our lives wonderful and beautiful again like they were. But instead, as Khan, she is so single-minded on vengeance. She's so overcome by vengeance and that desire that she ends up killing this man. So the choice of redemption, when you're offered exactly what the redemption is going to give you and to turn the other way. We get to see the character make this choice very early on in the show, and in a way that, you know, it's as we saw in Star Wars, or where we see Anakin and Padme and that the interplay. We care about these people. We care about this woman. We care about her father. And then she does this heinous act to show that she's beyond the point of redemption. And yet part of the purpose of the show, part of the theme of the show, is to explore how can somebody like that come to a point of redemption. And I think that that is a very powerful question, a very interesting question. Now, I don't think they're doing it in a moral relativist setting. They've told us what she's done is evil. There's no question. And I don't think any viewer would be able to say, well, that's the way things are. And I haven't seen the end of the show, so I don't know how well they handle it. But I can see where it's headed, and I do know what happens. So what I like about it is that they're not kind of flinching away and saying, here's the easy answer. Or there's a little bit of an easy answer, but how powerful is that thing that gets her to turn around? Is that enough? Is it believable that she turned, that she had a change of heart? And is redemption for her real? And is it something that she'd even want? So, again, what I like about this show is that it's not necessarily there for answers. It's there for questions.
And that's good art.
Exactly. And that's the most powerful kind, where it's up to us to decide for ourselves what we really, really believe. And sure, the author can hint what they believe toward us. If they're doing a good job, they're not going to say, you know, as Traffic, drugs are evil, don't do drugs, you know, just say no, the government should be out of drugs, it's up to you to decide. Okay, I could have figured that out watching the movie without you hitting me with it 10 times. Or they could do it like some of the movies that we've discussed in the past, like Clockwork Orange, where here's a character who's evil, and yet we have sympathy for him at a certain point, and then he goes back to evil, and then you're left with all these questions of, well, I felt bad for the guy. What am I supposed to do with that? And, well, he wasn't redeemed, and he didn't want redemption ever. So that's the kind of story where we are faced with questions that really stick with us, I think, is what I'm trying to say there. The questions hang with us, and then we have them to pour over, and then we can really, they're motivational, they're therapeutic in a way. They help us to come to grips with the things that are difficult in life that we wouldn't necessarily want to come to grips with. And so that's one of the great powers of art, when it's well done.
Yeah, the good art asks questions. Well, Mark, the time went by far too quickly once again, but it's always good having you. And if you get out there and review a few of those summer movies, even though you don't think it's going to be a good crop, we'll have you back. We'll see you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.